Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me from Mexico. Is that how you say it, Jeff?
Mexico, sí.
Like that? Where are you, mate?
Hi, I'm in Mexico City. We're down here working with the coaches down here. We've had a great 2-3 days of clinics and working with the players on the field. And actually, there's some prospects down here. As always was the case, you know, this is amazing. You know, I don't think people realize that they have played college football down here over 100 years. The first game was played in 1890-something. And there's a really highly developed college league here, which draws extremely well. You know, I watched the history of Mexican football yesterday, and it's not unusual to have upwards of 65,000 at the college national championship game. So it's a rich tradition, and it's fun to be a part of it.
Wow, awesome. Good stuff. Right, we're going to talk a little bit of NFL news. Apologies for the lateness of this podcast this week. There was a bit of a problem getting the room, actually, in the new NFL offices, Jeff. We had an official opening of the office earlier this week on Tuesday, and it meant that we were all kind of scrambling, so we couldn't really record on Tuesday. I'm now sitting in the Jack Crawford room. So I've been recording in the Menelik Watson room previously, and now I'm in the Jack Crawford room. So they're paying homage to all of their Brits in the NFL. It's a bit quiet time for news, actually. Since we last spoke, though, Jeff, Jay Cutler is heading to the broadcast booth. I thought this was just the market was cold on Cutler, but eventually he would sign somewhere. And by all accounts, he says he's done. I mean, I've interviewed Jay a couple of times. Not the most media-friendly bloke in the world, so this is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it was interesting. I was listening to talk radio in Chicago the other day, a Bears program, and a number of his teammates have come out and said that they think he'll do extremely well at it. And one of the reasons why they think he'll be good at it is he just doesn't really care what people think, and he's going to say what he feels. And, you know, he's a smart guy. I mean, there's no question he's an intelligent guy. He speaks well. He does all that stuff. And he's an ex-NFL quarterback. So, you know, it's interesting. He and Romo now move from the position of taking the snap to now in the media and in the radio or TV booth.
It is going to be fascinating to see, Jeff, because that would what you just highlighted is the exact point I think I would have made about Jay Cutler. Is he doesn't give a stuff what you think about him, and I've met Tony and I've interviewed Tony Romo a number of times as well, and Tony's kind of the opposite. He does care, and he does understand the media side of it. And I remember going to Dallas Cowboys training camp one summer, and I interviewed Tony Romo. I went back the following year, and he had a sty in his eye, so he didn't want to go on camera. He couldn't do the interview, and the PR guy told me he wasn't able to do the interview. But after practice finished, Tony actually jogged over and apologized in person for not being able to do the interview, said he wanted to just say hi, and then jogged off again. And I thought, so you've got one guy who really cares about the media and kind of what people think, and another one who doesn't. And it's going to be interesting because with two high-profile quarterbacks entering this media market at the same time, it is going to be fascinating to watch and hear how they do in this coming season.
Well, they are polar opposites from a personality standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think that it'll be refreshing. And I really think that if Cutler will, you know, just come out of himself a little bit in the media, because he is, like you say, almost monotone in some ways when he addresses the media. It'll be interesting to see, because the players that you hear talk about him say he's got a great dry wit, a great dry sense of humor, and he's kind of snarky. And, you know, hey, that if you can stand in line with a bunch of people in the media, that's it.
Jeff, this is obviously a team that's quite close to your area, your neck of the woods when you're up in Canada, the Buffalo Bills. They kind of stopped the bleeding. They've signed a new general manager, Brandon Bean, from the Carolina Panthers. And when you think about what kind of offseason it's been for the Buffalo Bills, Jeff, you know, they fire Rex Ryan. They then they get rid of Doug Whaley. They get rid of all of his scouting staff as well. I mean, this is just... You cry out for stability, and I don't know too much about Brandon Beam, but I assume there's a connection there with Sean McDermott through the Panthers.
Yeah, that Panther connection is really coming to light now. I think that this was not that you could see it coming, but when Mr. Pegula said that Sean McDermott, the head coach, was going to have some input in the general manager decision, you had to know that somebody from Carolina, and Bean has been a guy that, you know, there was some question about whether they would be able to get him away from Carolina because he's so well respected in that organization and so well thought of that he was kind of like the heir apparent to Gettleman when Gettleman, you know, moves on or hangs him up. So obviously this is a big challenge for him because he's stepping into an organization that's, you know, had some tremendous turnover in the last 4 years, and it's not a roster though that's, you know, bare. He's got some talent, he's got some players, and I think that it's a step in the right direction for the Bills.
All right, let's have just a couple of quick player signings that I want to talk about, and then we'll move on to our state of the franchise. We're going to resume our state of the franchise this week, and we'll be looking at the Baltimore Ravens traveling just down or up the road to Washington, Jeff. My geography is not too good there. Across.
It's really very close. So whatever way you say it, you can get there from there.
They're very close, right? Just 20-odd miles separating the two. So then we do the Baltimore Ravens, the Washington Redskins, and the Tennessee Titans today. A couple of signings to talk about. Jamaal Charles has gone to the Denver Broncos as a veteran running back who had to kick his heels for a while, but he gets a chance with the Broncos. And Jeff, let's just start with Jamaal Charles, because that's obviously irked him, the fact that he was sort of deemed surplus to requirements by the Kansas City Chiefs. He's already circling those games on his calendar.
Well, I think this is going to be a big thing to watch during this the lead up to the season. How healthy is he? Does he still have that ability to make one cut and get north and south and outrun everybody, or take the ball to the edge and stretch it and get the corner? You're talking about a guy that really, really, when he was healthy in Kansas City, was playing in an offense that was so challenged outside vertically that really everything had to be put on his shoulders. And I thought he was one of the really fine backs in the league. I'm hopeful that his health is where it needs to be, and that he can bring some dynamic aspect to the to the Broncos' run game.
Jeff, he's one of those athletes. I knew all about him, of course, and knew what he could bring to the table. But when you actually watch him on the field, there's something really special about him. And I went out to the Chiefs training camp a couple of years ago, and I think I told you on the podcast that it's not a proper football term, or it's not what you'd see in many scouting reports, but he looked like a skier. You know how a skier can just glide from one side to the mountain to the other, and how they change direction? This guy's change of direction skills when he was at the top of the game were sensational. And the Broncos, I guess, paying it's very close to veteran minimum money. This is just a worthwhile kick of the tires, I imagine.
Oh, I don't think there's any question, because like you said, he, not only could he change direction incredibly well, he was so smooth and he ran so fast. He was so smooth, it didn't look like he was running as fast as he was running. But then you see other guys, he's pulling away from other guys and outrunning angles. And so I think it's a great, great pickup by the Broncos, because as you say, at the money that they got him, it's really almost a risk-free opportunity to have a great player in your backfield.
One player who's not quite risk-free has joined the Minnesota Vikings. Michael Floyd, the wide receiver, spent back end of last season with the New England Patriots. So he was a first-round draft pick of the Arizona Cardinals in 2012. He had a 1,000-yard season in 2013. But last year, Jeff, he had the drink-driving incident. The Cardinals cut him loose. The Patriots gave him a chance. But now he's going to turn up in Minnesota. And again, I know it comes with risk. For me, the Vikings aren't overloaded with wide receivers. This is probably worth a look. What are your thoughts on this and Michael Floyd?
Well, I think, again, I'm sure Spielman and the people in Minnesota did their due diligence and really vetted him as much as they possibly could. Obviously, there has been a problem with alcohol historically in the kid's life. I hope he's over that. You always want to see these guys get their life back in order. The kid is—he's a talented guy. He's big. He fits a need that the Vikings have. So again, these are the kinds of off-season signings that come a little bit later. They come after the initial wave of free agency. And again, for the Vikings, I think it's one of those. You always look at risk versus reward when you make an off-season signing, and I think this is one they had to make.
All right, let's. I think we'll move on to our state of the franchise. We are approaching the quiet time, aren't we, Jeff? I mean, the clubs are going about their business in terms of off-season workouts, that kind of stuff. Actually, there was one other thing from the off-season workout. I saw there was praise for Jared Goff, that Sean McVay was really impressed with how much Jared Goff was getting his offense. That was not the case for Jared Goff this time last year, was it, Jeff? So hopefully we see a leap from year one to year two for Goff.
Yeah, and I think people have to understand how much of a jump it is for. And Jared Goff played at Cal. He played in a very good college program against very good college competition in the Pac-12. But even at that, it's a huge step when you talk about the enormity of that position in the National Football League, all that comes with that position. And there's no way that a college guy can be prepared for that, even, playing at a high-level program, because it's more than just being able to, read the difference between cover three and cover two. There's a whole lot that goes into it, being the quarterback of an NFL team.
Well, Patrick Mahomes said that exact thing, didn't he, Jeff? As he entered his NFL career with the Kansas City Chiefs, he openly admitted it was a lot more complex and a lot more complicated than he thought. And I remember from being on tour recently with Kurt Warner, Kurt said there are so many guys now in college, quarterbacks, who they can get further and further than ever before on athletic ability alone. And then when you take that next step and you've got to learn everything and dissect everything, it is a rude awakening.
Well, yeah, and think about that very statement that Kurt Warner made. These guys have gotten by, in a lot of cases, on their athleticism, right, athletic skills. Well, it happens at every position when you make the jump from college football to pro football. It's just like the jump from high school football to college football. You only now are going to compete against the best of the best. The best players in college are the ones that get a chance in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. And the players in the National Football League are the best on the planet. So it's a huge step athletically, it's a huge step mentally. Now, again, you're talking about those two quarterbacks. Both Goff and Mahomes played in the air raid offense, the Mike Leach offense. That's kind of where those guys morphed out of. Sonny Dykes, his coach at Cal, was assistant for Leach at Texas Tech. And, the head coach at Texas Tech actually played quarterback. So that system is a very productive college system, but it in no way mimics what the quarterback needs to do in a pro system. It's a one-read offense. It was interesting listening to Mahomes try and sell himself as you were getting closer to the draft, talking about all the, changing plays at the line and his ability they gave him the freedom to do all that stuff. And I understand what he was doing. He's, our buddy Lee had done a great job of prepping the kid on how to handle the media. But, again, it's just a whole different game.
Yeah, it's like he spends the entire pre-draft process telling you how good he is at calling plays and then gets to the NFL and says, I'm not actually very good at that yet. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then. And we're going to start with the Baltimore Ravens. They went 8-8 last season, and it was tough going being a Ravens fan, Jeff. 12 of their 16 games were decided by one score. They came within inches of stealing the AFC North on Christmas Day before losing out to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let me give you the tale of the tape. They're 17th on offense, 28th rushing attack, 12th in passing. It was a top 10 defense. They were 7th overall on defense, 5th against the run, 9th against the pass. So as we start a conversation with the Ravens, Jeff, and I see that they are much better on defense, I'm somewhat surprised, considering they lost Steve Smith as well, that they used their first four picks in the draft on defense. This is traditionally a defensive team, but I was surprised. I thought they would have looked for some offensive playmakers. What do you think of where we are with the Ravens right now?
Yeah, You know what? I was a little bit surprised at that, too. You know, you look at this draft, and I think there were some really good picks in the draft, really outstanding value picks. But really, in talking in terms of, you know, improving the offense, you got to go all the way down to Nico Siragusa in the fifth round at guard for a guy who, and I think he kind of fell in the draft. That kid's a really good player. He's tough. He's got good athleticism. He got a great name for Baltimore, Siragusa. And, you know, I think, though, Neil, you look at this Baltimore team and you see a lot of age on defense, too. And they've got some deficiencies on that side of the ball. Taking Marlon Humphrey, I thought, with the first pick was smart. He's a long corner from Alabama who's tough and, you know, can play man-to-man. Then they went after, you know, guys on defense that could help them. You know, Tyus Bowser is a edge rusher from Houston, and Timmy Williams, you know, again, another edge guy out of Alabama. So they obviously feel like, you know, with Dumervil gone and some age now starting to creep into that up that front, they really needed to replenish those guys. I agree with you. I just don't know where the weapons are for Joe Flacco on this football team.
No, and I mean, if we start with Flacco, Jeff, and then we'll move on to his weapons. Weapons-wise, he's going to hope that Breshad Perriman finally gets in at wide receiver. You know, you've lost Steve Smith, so Michael Campanaro steps up. Mike Wallace has been accused of being a one-trick pony. But up front is where you would sort of worry, because Flacco, Jeff, since... And I know he's had the knee injury, and last year was his first year coming back from that knee injury. Flacco has had some moments where he's looked very flapped. And the one thing you could say about Flacco during that 2012 playoff run was that he had ice water in his veins and he was unflappable. But he hasn't been that in recent years. And I wonder if it starts up front with the Ravens.
Well, I think it even starts further up front than that. And then, when I say that, I'm talking about, you know, they've had a series of coordinators there.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, you go back and Kubiak came in, and he seemed to flourish under Kubiak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a really good mix. And then Trestman came in, and that didn't work. And now he's got Marty Morningwig. And so, I think they just had turnover on offense in terms of approach and style and communication. And the communication between the quarterback and the coordinator is really, really critical.
Mm.
It just wasn't there. And I think, you know, Marty is a really good football coach and has coached some really good quarterbacks and had tremendous success as a coordinator in the league. But I just don't, even with all that, I just don't see this as a team with weapons that scare you.
No. Over the last couple of years, Jeff, they've let Kalichi Osemele go at guard, Ricky Wagner at tackle, Jeremy Zutar at center. So those are a couple of the issues up front. Let's look at the skill. I mentioned the receivers. Then you got Dennis Pitter, who's kind of getting up there in age at tight end. They've got a bunch of tight ends, actually. They drafted Max Williams, didn't they, last year? But when I look at the running backs, Jeff, is it Terrence West, Danny Woodhead, Lorenzo Taliaferro? I mean, they're just... I'm going to be careful how I say this, because I'm not anywhere ever close to the NFL or ever will be, but they sound like just guys, Jeff.
Well, I think, you know, when you compare them to, you know, what's out there and what other teams have, that's a fair evaluation. You know, you look at some of those guys that you just mentioned, Pitta, for example, really a really good tight end, has been productive over his career, but he's had injury issues. Danny Woodhead's coming off a knee. So, you know, there are injury questions in addition to, you know, questions about age, because both Pitta and Woodhead are guys that are at the back end of their career. So, you know, again, it's just not a roster that when you look at it makes you go, we're in for a tough one here if you're a defensive guy. I think this is a team that's going to have to win games the way that they won the games last year. They got to keep it close. They got to play great defense, be outstanding in the kicking game, which they've been, and, you know, just hope that the other team, you know, turns it over and, you know, they get a short field and they can punch a score in and, you know, win that way. I don't see vertical weapons in the passing game. I don't see, you've got a quarterback who has had success, but coming, as you said, just, you know, with a knee history now and
do you think it'll be better this year, Jeff, from a physical point of view?
I think always, Neil. I think always the second and third years off a knee are your best years. It really does take. You can get them back on the field, but to really be not only physically but mentally, you know, where you're not thinking about that. You know, when you're standing in the pocket and there are guys falling around you and bodies all over the place, you know, again, it's just natural human motion to you know, recognize that you got a wounded knee. You're going to try and protect yourself. So they got to protect him. They got to keep him on his feet. They got to get the ball out, and they got to play great situational football, not turn it over, and you know, win games, win close games. That's kind of who their personality is.
Yeah. Now, if we've got question marks on the offense, Jeff, some of the real positives are on defense. They re-signed Brandon Williams at nose tackle. They've still got Terrell Suggs, and C.J. Mosley is coming along at inside linebacker. Zach Orr sadly was forced to retire early in his NFL career, but then they add Brandon Carr via free agency. Tony Jefferson can team at safety with Eric Weddle after coming over from Arizona. They get Jimmy Smith back at corner, and then you've got Marlon Humphrey to add to that mix as well, and still Ladarius Webb in there. So this defense, which is why it's been top 10 defense for a number of years, is going to be the strength of this team, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Correa, the young kid that they drafted last year, has shown flashes that he's going to be a good player. I really like the Warmley kid they took, the inside player, the defensive lineman that they took.
Chris Warmley.
Yeah, tough. He brings that kind of Baltimore edge. You know, Baltimore's always kind of had those kind of guys, physical guys. You know, he may not have a giant upside when you look at him, but I think he's a guy that, you know, his leadership skills, his toughness, the kind of kid he is, all those things are the kind of guys that you know, Harbaugh looks for.
And we got, of course, just flipping back to offense just to finish off, Jeff, got a Brit on the Ravens roster now, Jermaine Illuminor, the offensive tackle. He could play guard as well, I suppose. So, you know, he's somebody we can watch out for in the coming
years. I think that was a tremendous pick by them.
Good value.
Not because he's an English kid. I'm discounting all that. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that here's a kid that when you watch his tape at Texas A&M has a lot of athletic ability. He doesn't have a great, he hasn't played that much football, you know. He's really a raw guy that you look at and you say, we can get him at that pick in the draft and spend time with him and work with him and hone his skills. And, you know, I think the guy's going to be a good NFL player. And, you know, I think it's fantastic. And this is a true Brit now. This is a kid that, you know, started playing for the London Blitz and now is playing in the NFL. So I think it's another great story. And I hope one day he has a room in the office.
You know? Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to make sure of that for sure. So finishing off then, Ravens 17th on offense last year. Didn't really drastically improve there. Defense was 7th. Probably did get better in the offseason. Are we going arrow up, sideways, or down for the Ravens, Jeff?
Well, it's kind of, I guess, on which side of the ball you look. I'd say arrow up on defense, on offense. I'd just say, you know, maybe even a shade down. You know, but as a football team, I think they are, well, just exactly what you described. 17th on offense, 7th on defense, going to have to win on defense, and a team that will probably finish somewhere between, you know, they could be an 8-8 team, they could be a 10-6 team, or they could be a 6-10 team.
Well, actually, just finished, we didn't really mention John Harbaugh, and that's one thing that John Harbaugh always churns out, Jeff, is this will be a competitive team.
And you know what? He will always have those kinds of teams. Mm. And there's a great piece on NFL.com that fans should go watch, and it's his speech to the rookies when they came in for rookie minicamp. And it's really good, and he talks about how the NFL is a meritocracy. That's it. That's the one. But what, you know, and I'm thinking that's a pretty big word there for a guy. But then I thought, well, he went to Miami of Ohio, so that's an academic school. But you know, it's about what you do now. It's about what you do today. It's about being competitive every day. And, you know, you've been around him, Neil. You know that that's what makes him tick. That's in the Harbaugh gene somewhere because his brother's the exact way. And that's what that team responds to. And that's why, even though they were underpowered offensively last year, like you said, they're at Christmas with a chance to win the division.
All right, let's move on to the Washington Redskins then. They went 8-7-1 last season. They were in charge of their own playoff destiny. They lost to the New York Giants in week 17. Kirk Cousins had an interception, which he'd love to have back towards the end of that game against the Giants, and having spent time with Kirk in the offseason, he was very critical of himself, Jeff, on that play. He said that that play showed he's got to improve his situational awareness. It was first down. They had all their timeouts left. They were by midfield. He didn't need to force that throw. So that's how their season ended last year. They were third on offense, second in passing yards, almost 300 yards per game. They're over 400 yards per game on offense. Defense, though, was 28th in the NFL, 24th against the run, 25th against the pass. And with that in mind, they used their first three selections in the NFL draft on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep, and I think that they got in the first round, I think they got a guy that they have to feel like there's no way that Jonathan Allen would be there in the first round at their selection. Again, I think there are guys that you talk to in this business that will tell you that he was the best football player in college football last year.
Right.
And I mean, he's one of those rare guys that can rush the passer from inside. He's tough. He plays the run extremely well. That is a big, big, big get for the Redskins. Now, again, he also comes with a little bit of concern in that, you know, there's some shoulder history there. You know, there's kind of this school of thought floating around, and I don't buy into it. But you know, you look at Alabama players, and are they, you know, hit out by the time they come to the NFL? Mm. So I think that's the only question about Jonathan Allen. But I think that's a great pick. You know, and Ryan Anderson, his teammate, gives them an outside linebacker guy that they need so much. But the key one to me in their draft, when you look at their draft defensively, Neil, is Fabian Moreau, the cornerback from UCLA. Because if he's healthy, here's a guy that's had some, you know, injury history, but if he's healthy, he can really, really help that back end, and they need help back there. This defense is the thing that's held the Redskins back. You can, again, I it's awful, you know, good of your guy to take the bullet for the ball that he threw, but this defense kept them from winning the division. It wasn't Kirk Cousins throwing an interception. This defense was bad, B-A-D bad last year. And if they're going to win the division, they got to get better on defense.
Yeah, and I think you're right to highlight corner, Jeff, because Bashaud Breeland was supposed to be the guy opposite Josh Norman this past year, and he was supposed to have this kind of lockdown pairing, and Breeland was a massive disappointment. Then you add in D'Angelo Hall got injured at safety, and you got Will Blackman. Bless him, Will Blackman, I've known for a number of years. He's been around the block, but I don't know if he's a starting safety in the NFL anymore. So they had those kinds of issues to deal with on defense. Just as we look at this team generally, Jeff, and we break into some of the positions, this was a franchise in disarray at various points in the off season. They fired general manager Scott McLuhan. They were reports that Kirk Cousins asked for a trade. Kirk cleared that up and said he asked what was going on and wanted to know what the situation was. And they said, "You're our guy." But you know, they lost 2 1,000-yard receivers as well, DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. So at various points, it looked like it was a franchise in disarray. Now, they've kind of stopped the bleeding a little bit. They added Terrell Pryor, wide receiver, and you still look at the weapons around Kirk Cousins, and you've got Josh Doctson, who you hope will come back in his second year, Jamison Crowder at wide receiver, and you've got Jordan Reed at tight end. So is this a franchise in disarray for you?
No, I don't think it's in disarray, but it always has. I think just because you know the history of the Redskins,
right?
You know, it's been that kind of an organization historically since Dan Snyder was there, and the McLuhan thing was really unfortunate. I thought it was not handled well. It was, you know, it was some of the stuff that got out in the media didn't need to get out in the media.
Yep.
And you know, I don't know if Bruce Allen, you know, would like to have that one back again.
Sure.
But you know, they kind of they're like a fighter that got stung, and you know, has to kind of get his legs back a little bit. And I think they did. I thought in the draft, when you go back to the draft, one of the areas on offense where they needed some, you know, they needed a depth, if you will, but they needed another guy was running back. Mm. And I, you know, you look at Samaje Perine from Oklahoma. you know, and everybody talked about Mixon at Oklahoma. But look at the Oklahoma tape, and I think he's a guy that fits them extremely well. He's tough. He can get inside, you know, he can run inside the tackles and get you tough yards, and he's extremely good out of the backfield catching the ball, which he has to be in that offense.
Jeff, Scott McLuhan said recently on a radio station in Washington that Kirk Cousins has reached his ceiling and that he's a quarterback you have to put weapons around. I've seen Kirk play on the field. Maybe it's because I know him off the field, but you know, you're not going to get somebody who's more dedicated and willing to learn. And he's got actually in his office, in his home office, he's got up a piece of paper that's got a grade that he got for his maths exam when he was in school, and he got a C- or something like that. And it was a reminder to him of what happens when you don't prepare. So he's a very diligent quarterback. But I've also seen him from the sidelines of Wembley. And to me, I mean, he had an outstanding game at Wembley, 450 plus yards. He made every throw in the book, and he's a back-to-back 4,000 yard passer. But Scott McLuhan is not alone in those kind of thoughts on Kirk Cousins having reached his ceiling. I mean, what have we got here? He was in the Pro Bowl. Is he a Pro Bowler? Is he a game manager? What have we got with Kirk Cousins?
I'm going to tell you, look at the numbers. And I mean, this. And Scott McLuhan's a good football guy, but that statement even just surprises me a little bit. Hmm. Name me one quarterback that doesn't have to have weapons around it.
Right.
I mean, that. Look at Joe Flacco. We just talked about Joe Flacco. He you know, his career now has hit its ceiling. Why? One of the reasons is he has nobody to throw the ball to, and he has, you know, that he's getting hit too much, and they don't have a running game that he can, you know, that he can lean on. So, yeah, every quarterback needs those things. I think, you know, again, I'm a Cousins fan. For all the reasons you mentioned, plus Neil, he's such a great competitor. Mm. You know, almost too much sometimes. And I think he's learned now and matured now, and as he's you know, gotten into the middle part of his career in the National Football League, that, you know, you want to play with passion, but you can't, you know, wear it on your sleeve when you're playing quarterback.
They do still have some guys that can get after the quarterback. I think Ryan Kerrigan can still do that, Jeff, and they hope Preston Smith and Trent Murphy can get to the quarterback off the edge. On defense, is it solely that secondary that worries you?
No, but because, again, you look at, you called it out. I mean, they're, what, 20 in the bottom of the league, in the bottom of the 20s in every statistical category. So it's not just the back end. They can't stop the run. That's been a historic problem there. Again, we got a change of coordinators coming, and, you know, it'll be a new approach. And, you know, there's always there's hope when that happens, but there's always turmoil when that happens too, because it takes time to get adjusted to a new guy, to a new way of doing things, to a new voice, new coaches, all of those things. Mm-hmm. So for the Redskins, who I think have the ability to win the East, they've got to get that defense squared away. And I think Jonathan Allen is a big part of that, because now you've got a big, strong guy inside that can both rush the passer and play the run.
I really should have more structure to these, Jeff, because I'm hopping back over to offense. It's just things that are popping into my mind as we're sitting here chatting, you know. But
yeah.
I mean, the offensive line is very good. Trent Williams up front and Brandon Scherff is developing nicely at guard. But just going back to offense, and you talked about it with Baltimore, and you've just mentioned it there on defense. So this is going to be a new offensive coordinator now as well with Matt Kavanaugh, because Sean McVay is off to the LA Rams.
Yep, and, you know, again, it's really Jake Gruden's offense.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, you can see his fingerprints all over it. He has been a offensive coordinator in the league at Cincinnati. He, you know, played the position when he was arena head coach. He, you know, they were renowned for what they did offensively. So he, you know, he comes from a family of offensive guys, you know, again, John being his brother. And so I think it'll be less disruptive, the coordinator change on offense. The key thing is how Matt Kavanaugh will, you know, interact is going to be the critical thing. His ability to interact with Kirk Cousins in a positive way is really going to be critical.
I think
when you look at that change.
Yeah, that is interesting, Jeff. And Kirk spoke to me about that. He said, you know, Kirk is quite a detail guy. And he said they almost joke and call Jay Gruden the natural, You know, Jay Gruden will say, I want this kind of play, but he doesn't necessarily know all the details of it, which is fascinating when that's a head coach in the NFL. But Jay Gruden knows what he likes and what he wants, and then it's going to be up to Kavanaugh and Cousins to get the detail and the kind of meat on the bone, if you will. It was fascinating to hear that.
Yeah, and you know, that's not the first time that's happened in NFL history. You know, I think one of the guys that's, you know, and I know the 1977 Falcons had the best defense ever in history in National Football League. Check it out. The, mm-hmm. You know, 9.2 points per game. And if you ask Jerry Glanville about the details of that defense, you're not going to get a lot of information because he knew what he wanted. It sounds exactly like Gruden. He knew what he wanted, and it was kind of incumbent upon the coaches around him to fill in the detail. Mm. And, you know, so you know, these guys are sharp guys. They're idea guys, and mm-hmm. so they're concept guys. So Jay wants a cover four beater, a cover two beater, and then let the quarterback and the coordinator work out the kind of the details of it. I think that's not a bad way to go.
Mm. Redskins then, Jeff. Arrow up, sideways, down. They were a play away from the playoffs for the second straight year last year. Are they a contender again this year?
I think so. I think they'll be a playoff team. I think the Cowboys have come back a little bit. You know, you got to think the Giants probably are the favorite in the league. But when you can move the football and you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't again this year. And if they can just get better on defense, I think they'll challenge everybody in the East.
All right, let's finish up with one of the feel-good stories of the 2016 season, the Tennessee Titans. They went 9-7, again, very close to making the playoffs, just fell away in the final week or so of the season. Marcus Mariota suffered that broken leg late last year on Christmas Eve. It was a nasty old Christmas Eve, actually, with Derek Carr going down as well. That night. But this, Jeff, before we sort of dig into all of the ins and outs of the Tennessee Titans, I feel like we've done a number of state of the franchises in the last few years where we're like, this team is just a nondescript team. This is a team that doesn't have much to talk about. This is a team that doesn't have star power. And that's not the case anymore. This was an entertaining and fun team to watch in 2016. And it's a team that's going to make people sit up and take notice when they take the field in 2017.
Yeah, I think so. And this is a team that's done a really, really good job because, as you mentioned, it was not very many years ago you looked at that roster and said, boy, this isn't a very good football team. Mm. And now you look at the roster and you say, this is a team on the come. This is a team ready to make a deep playoff run, a team that, you know, I'm not sure they have Super Bowl talent yet, mm-hmm. but they're a team that certainly has talent to get deep into the playoffs, and you know that starts with the quarterback. And I think you know one of the moves that has really been a positive move is bringing Dick LeBeau at whatever age he is. I mean, he might be 100 years old. Who knows?
He looks about 40. It's sickening, isn't
it? I know, it's amazing. And you know what? And I just did a study on their defense, Neil, and I watched all 16 games last year very closely. He really is clever. I mean, mm-hmm. he really does a phenomenal job. Because you look at their overall talent on defense, and they're good, but they're not great. But, boy, he does a great job of giving them a chance every week.
See, Jeff, that's why you're smart and you can be more than 30 years in this business. You can be a smart coach, but it doesn't hurt to copy Dick LeBeau every now and then, does it?
No, and that's why. Hey, listen, I'm smart enough to know I don't know, so I go find out from guys who do know.
There you go, know what you don't know, right?
let's
have a look at the tail of the tape with the Titans. Then they were 11th on offense. Their exotic smash mouth style saw them have the third ranked rushing attack in the NFL, 25th in passing. Defense was 20th, but strong against the run, second against the run, and 30th against the pass. So two real areas of obvious need there. And the Titans used three picks in the top 100 in the draft on weapons for Marcus Mariota, and they addressed their secondary in free agency and in the draft with Adoree Jackson, who might need some developing at corner. But it looks like they knew they needed to get some more weapons for Mariota. They get Corey Davis, Taywan Taylor, Jonnu Smith at tight end. I mean, they had very obvious needs going into the offseason, Jeff, and they kind of ticked both those boxes.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Daniel, I'm not that fired up about their draft, and I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, Corey Davis, and it was interesting hearing Steve Smith's comments when Corey Davis was drafted.
Strong, weren't they, Jeff?
Oh, man. I mean, really strong.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the kid and there's some durability issues. He's had an injury history, and he was extremely productive in the Mid-America Conference. But that's a conference where you're not going to see those kinds of corners that you're going to match up with every week in the National Football League. You're not going to see the press man coverage. That's not what you're going to get out of that league. So he was highly productive in a league that was a shade off, and where he didn't see the kind of technique and the kind of speed that he's going to see when he plays in the National Football League. So his ability to get off press and all those things are going to be challenged. If he is the kid has ability now. But again, mm-hmm. I think there's some questions. I thought that was a little high for him. Jackson too, I agree with you. I think he needs some time. He has a lot of ability. He's got great ball skills. He'll give him a real boost in the return game. But if you look at the Washington USC game last year, Ross, the first rounder at Cincinnati, I mean, he spun him around a bunch. It was not a good day. And I know they all have bad days, but, you know, that's when you want to see a guy really step up when he plays against high-level competition. And, you know, Jackson had a tough night that night. I think he's going into a system with LeBeau where he's going to have a chance to, you know, at least get on the field as a rookie, maybe start as a rookie, or certainly be in the nickel rotation. And then, you know, again, you look at the rest of the draft, the next guy to me that was a guy that you said that's a good pick was Jono Smith, the tight end out of FIU, who's athletic and can block and do some things, because Delanie Walker's not getting any younger. So right. I thought that was a good pick. But overall, the draft, I wasn't that excited about.
No, and Jeff, they're going to have to hope that Davis is one of those rookie receivers that can hit the ground running, because otherwise you've got Rishard Matthews, who I like, and then after that, you've got Tarjay Sharp, who really hasn't come on. He flashed a few little bits and pieces, but nothing much, and then Harry Douglas. So you're hoping that Corey Davis is a rookie who gets it straight away, and that he's not a Laquon Treadwell, who was almost on ice for the year for the Minnesota Vikings last year. As we look through the rest of the offense, good offensive line, Jeff, bookends at tackle with Taylor Luan and Jack Conklin. Gotta like what those two do, and good running back pairing as well, isn't it, with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry?
Yeah, and again, I think that is exactly what this team wants, what this team needs. They want to be physical. They want to pound on you, running the football, and then use Mariota's athleticism on the edge and his ability to get the ball down the field. You know, when you look at Mariota, I really think that you see so much development there, and you see a guy that's really, in some ways, Neil, playing beyond his years, because you look at him in the you look at his success in the red zone. And when I say success in the red zone, it's being successful in the red zone isn't scoring touchdowns every time. Obviously, that's what you'd like to have, but it's not turning it over down there, being smart with the football, because you know you're going to get points.
That's supposed to be the toughest place to succeed, Jeff, isn't it?
Absolutely, and you know, here's why. When the field shrinks, right, when you get down inside the 20, which is what we call high red, when you're in that high red zone and then you get down into the tight red and then the goal line, there's so little field to play with. And, you know, you just don't have the ability to stretch a defense vertically so they can squat all over everything. So the windows get very, very tight, and that's where Mariota's decision-making and his accuracy have really allowed him to play beyond his years in that area of the field.
Jeff, in your experience, we talked about it with Joe Flacco. So there's a year where it's trying to get back up to speed when you've blown out a knee ligament. Is there any concern that it was so late in the season that Marcus Mariota broke his leg, or is that something where from week one he can be 100%?
You know what? I think he's going to be healthy, and I base that not only on what I've read, but I base it on talking to people back home in Hawaii who know the kid and know his work ethic and know how his off season has gone, and they say he'll be as strong as ever. But boy, oh boy, I tell you what, isn't it? That's what happens in this game when, if you're a Titan fan and you see him laying on the ground, you know, holding his leg, just like we saw Derek Carr doing in Oakland, you just realize, oh boy, that could be the end of, you know, that could be the end of our chance to get to the Super Bowl. And it was for the Raiders last year, and for the Titans, this is a kid they've got to keep healthy because he's their future.
They are. I mean, we kind of pay attention to injuries so much, and that's the reason, Jeff, because it felt like, you know, the seasons of the Titans and the Raiders came crashing to a screeching halt at the same time, and it was a shame to see two guys who'd been so good. I mean, he's so fun to watch, isn't he? Because I remember a game against Jacksonville where it was his rookie year, and he just literally ran away from the defense. He ran like 80-odd yards for a touchdown. You're like, that's a quarterback.
Yeah, you know what? And that was what was interesting when he was coming out. You know, there was a big controversy about who's the better quarterback, him or Jameis Winston. Mm. And people didn't realize, and I think now they're starting to get it in the league, just how athletic Marcus Mariota is, just how well he can run. Because when he gets out and he starts to stretch it out, he can run like a receiver. I mean, he has big-time athletic ability, and he's got a strong arm. He's very accurate, and I think the thing I love about the kid is that just the maturity and the way he handles things, and you know, he is exactly what you would want in a franchise quarterback.
Let's move on to the defensive side of the ball then. They've got some playmakers, especially in the front seven. Jarrell Casey is still very good at defensive tackle. Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo combined for about 20 sacks last year. Avery Williamson was about 150 tackles last year for the Titans. This looks like a decent defense, Jeff. Do you feel like they've done enough in the secondary? Because it's all very well, you know, me saying they fixed the secondary or they addressed the secondary, but Jonathan Cyprian was not a star name at Jacksonville, and Logan Ryan was, well, what was Logan Ryan for the Patriots? I mean, is this enough that's been done?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction.
Right.
The reason I say that is you got two guys that are veterans that will come in. And, you know, there is a learning curve. We talked about it at the quarterback position. Well, certainly there's a learning curve in the back end, too, because now, obviously, you're facing better players every day. The systems are so much more involved, particularly when you're playing for a guy like LeBeau. And you're gonna have to do techniques that you probably have never used as a college player. So taking some of those veteran guys who've been around a little bit, who've seen the game, understand the game, you know, and then plugging them in, I think that's a positive, and you know, that'll give a guy like Adoree Jackson a chance to grow up in the system and become a situational player first, and then a starter.
What's your thoughts on Mike Mularkey, Jeff? He doesn't get a huge amount of attention, but to me, I mean, just looking at it from afar, just a very solid football coach. I mean, I don't know if he ever gets much attention. What are your thoughts on where they are in terms of their head coach?
I think he's a good coach. I really do think he's a good coach. And you know, you follow his career from player to offensive coordinator. Mm. I really felt he got a tough deal handed to him in Jacksonville.
Agree.
And you know, it was interesting when you know, we had Mark Brunell hanging around with us and going on tour with us. I asked him about Mularkey. I said, what are your thoughts on Mularkey? And here's a guy who's, you know, played for some pretty good football coaches in his career. And he had really high praise for him. He thought he was a solid guy, a guy that the players gravitate to, smart. He understands, you know, how to mitigate your liabilities and accentuate the things that you do well, which I think you look at that football team, and that's the Tennessee Titans. And so I think he's one of those guys that doesn't get a lot of attention, but maybe should. But that's kind of Tennessee. I mean, they're not in a huge media market. They've kind of always been that, you know, just under the radar team. Mm. But this is a good football team. I think it's ready to make a push.
Yeah, and that's why, as we finish up, Jeff, I was going to ask you that, because they're not going to sneak under anyone's radar this year. And I think we all feel like they're an arrow up team. Taylor Luan, who I mentioned earlier, at offensive tackle, he's predicting the Super Bowl, and he's not shied away from those comments since he made them. This is a team that's going into 2017 with some confidence.
Yeah, and I think it's confidence that's based on the success that they've had. It's grounded in reality. It's not just, you know, talking. And so when Taylor Lewan says that, and like you say, it wasn't just some flippant comment that, you know, got heard on some radio station and then went viral. That's what the kid believes, and he's stood by those comments, and I'm sure that that's an indication of the level of confidence that they feel as a football team.
Absolutely. All right, so that's our state of the franchise for this week. We'll be back with that next week with Tampa Bay, Denver, and Detroit. Jeff, let's just take a few questions from the mailbag to finish off this week. One from Peter Marks, who says, is the AFC South slowly becoming one of the most interesting in the NFL? They've all got young quarterbacks. This is going to be interesting. If Deshaun Watson takes over for the Houston Texans, you've got Andrew Luck at Indianapolis. We've got Marcus Mariota, and of course Blake Bortles is still there in Jacksonville. And it's always a competitive division, this one, Jeff.
I think it's going to be a dogfight. I mean, I really think it's going to be one of the most competitive divisions in the NFL. And there's no clear-cut team that you say, well, you know, they should win the division. Every one of the teams you mentioned could win the division, or they could finish last in the division.
Right.
I mean, it's that kind of a division. So I think, you know, for fans of those teams, you know, they're going to be in for some, you know, ups and downs and some nail-biting finishes. And I think it's going to be a great, great year to be a fan in that division. Houston has a Super Bowl caliber defense. You know, we talked about Tennessee. You know, as long as you got an Andrew Luck, you got a chance. And I think that new regime in Indianapolis has done a tremendous job of helping a defense that needed help. And now you got the Coughlin factor and the toughness and, you know, the talented roster that's in Jacksonville. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
I saw actually a quote from Brian Schottenheimer, the quarterbacks coach in Indianapolis, saying that Andrew can't have any more double-digit interception seasons. They last year they said he couldn't shouldn't run like a linebacker, and then they blamed him for the salary cap and not having enough money to spend on defense. Maybe we've got it wrong all this time, Jeff. Maybe it's not Andrew Luck who's keeping the Colts afloat. Maybe it's all his fault.
Nah, I don't know. I'm not buying that. You know, because I hear that same. You know, it's funny, but you hear the same thing about Flacco.
Yeah.
They say, well, you know, the reason that they can't sign offensive players is because they're paying so much. You're going to pay for the quarterback. You better get used to that.
It's just reality.
That's just life. That's life in the league.
Exactly.
Now, I think when you look at that, when Andrew Luck doesn't have to make every throw and doesn't have to bring him from behind all the time, and it isn't all put on his shoulders, then he won't have double-digit interception seasons. Mm. All right? Because right now that kid has to make plays. Because if he doesn't make them, they don't win games.
Well, Jeff, even the greats, when they feel like the game is all on their shoulders. A couple of years ago, Drew Brees' interception total suddenly went up because he felt like every time the Saints stepped on the field, they had to score. So you naturally become more aggressive, right?
You become more aggressive and you know, borderline desperate because you know if you don't get them in the end zone that the defense can't hold up for you. And that's a bad place to be. That's a bad place to be as a signal caller. That's a bad place to be as an offensive lineman. And it's an extremely bad place to be as a quarterback.
All right, let's take another question. Ben Roberts says, if Jalen Smith can get on the field this year, what sort of impact do you see him having? So this is Dallas's second round linebacker from last year. Redshirted his first year in the NFL, and Jeff, for a while there were worries in the offseason that he wasn't getting the feeling back in his foot. He was having drop foot, so he's like the nerves hadn't started firing again, but he's made a lot more positive noise in the last couple of weeks and saying that he's going to be ready for week one. Let's hope and assume he is. What kind of player are the Dallas Cowboys going to get?
Well, if you go back and you look at his college tape, what you're going to get is a dynamic sideline to sideline linebacker, and he's as a college player now, prior to the injury, extremely athletic, you know, can run, will hit you. He's everything you look for in a linebacker, and, you know, again, I'm hopeful because I think anytime a guy goes through what he's gone through and to battle that, and imagine, Neil, that you're an athlete, a high-level athlete, who you almost take for granted your physical gifts because you've always had them, right?
Mm.
And then all of a sudden it's taken away, and the fear that he must have felt, the insecurity he must have felt when you can't even get your foot to flex, which is, you know, the drop foot thing. So for him to battle through this, I hope he can come back. And certainly if you're a Cowboy fan, that would be a huge plus. You know, put him in there with Sean Lee and that rest of that crew, that would really help that defense.
Let's take this one, Jeff. Last question on this week's Inside the Huddle comes from Brian Friel, who says, is there a future for Robert Griffin III, even as a backup somewhere? Jeff, just on that backup thing for RG3, maybe it's just me. I want my backup to love football, and I'm not saying he doesn't love football, but we've seen sort of indications that, I don't know, RG3 hasn't quite got it yet. I mean, RG3 as a backup, I don't know if he's going to do all of the work that needs to be done to be prepared and ready to put into the game. So almost it feels like if he wasn't a starter, you might shy away from him as a backup. I don't know. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think there's some truth to that. I really think there's some truth to that. You know, and you look, it just baffles me, right? You got a guy in Colin Kaepernick that can't get a job. You got a guy in Jay Cutler who now is going to go to the broadcast booth because he could get a job. And you see Brandon Whedon get signed. And I just go, what?
Yeah, you're saying, is Kaepernick not one of the best 96 quarterbacks around, you know?
Exactly. He took a team to one pass away from winning a Super Bowl, right? And then you look at RG3, he's been a Pro Bowl-level player.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jay Cutler, for all of the things that everybody loves to bash Jay Cutler about is, you know, if you need a throw, Jay Cutler can get you a throw. But, you know, in each of those cases, there are just things about them that scare people off.
So do you think that, especially then, if you're not looking at him as a starter, you don't want that kind of distraction that comes with that for a backup?
Well, I think a lot's going to depend on your organization, on the strength of your locker room, on, you know, there are a lot of factors that you weigh into that, right? Because nobody will ever convince me that, and Kaepernick's got holes in him. Every player does, right? Mm-hmm. But I just cannot believe that he's not one of, like you say, the 96 best quarterbacks on this planet. And right now, the kid can't find a job. And I think RG3, you know, again, same scenario. Jay Cutler, same scenario. How can Jay Cutler not be better than Brandon Whedon? You know, it baffles me. But those are decisions that are made because it's not just the talent that you get when you get those guys. You get all of the other stuff, too. And in some cases, they feel like that's just too much.
Absolutely. Well, that's a question we can all ponder until next week, Jeff. What the hell is Brandon Whedon still doing in the NFL? And on that note, safe travels back to Canada, Jeff. Thanks for joining us. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe, sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.